Hello, I'm Radek.
I'm Michael.
And this is the podcast.
A sounding board for interesting ideas and insights. We discuss books we read and want to share with you.
As well as technology and productivity, which is what we do by day, working on our app, Nozbe.
Or whatever else comes to mind.
And today we want to get back a little bit to home office improvements, home automation a little bit, and just tinkering and drilling and stuff like that.
Oh, yes. And we've got lots of things to say about that because I'm in the middle of the best procrastination task ever, renovating my home office yet again.
You do that every year, right?
Yes, I think so. We're going to link in the show notes to the category on my blog, sleepinsleep.com/tag/office, and you will be able to see the progression of my home office. Back from 2010 or even less. So like really lots of years.
Believe it or not, I have followed your home office improvements since 2011.
Yeah, you see? And then I have, there is a post from 2009 as well. Damn. And there is a post from 2009. And that's it. So this is the, as far as I go. And you can see, like, you know, because I've changed homes and I've been traveling, changing houses. But even now that I've changed the house, like to my final house, hopefully for now, I've made this house my more or less permanent house in 2014. But still, even in from 2014, my home office was changing. In 2015, I added the height adjustable IKEA desk, so you can, you know, I can sit and work standing and work sitting. And even then, I managed to move it around quite a few times.
Yeah, and I see some of the furniture you've had in 2011 or even earlier than that.
Yes,
that you still use.
Exactly. Yes. I've and this is one of the reasons I'm doing a little bit more of the renovation here. I'm changing the furniture because I have this old IKEA furniture here, and it's pretty dated. And recently, when you were here, you remember there was some water coming in, and some of the furniture also got damaged. But it's really always
oh, no.
Really no, but not a lot. But anyway, it was just adding to the suggestion which I already had to change some things here and to rethink how I work, which kind of things I put next to my desk, which I don't, which things I should keep and which not, and I think, as we always repeat on this show, feedback loops, you know, every year I just discover that I work a little bit differently. I need a few different things. I need fewer things. So with this new concept, I will actually have fewer drawers and fewer places to put things because I need fewer things in my reach.
Yeah. When I was going through the Marie Kondo treatment, I got rid of so many things that even though like all of the furniture behind me is already a reduced version from what I had originally, like I had stuff I gave away because I needed that, I didn't need that much anymore. And so this seemed like a super minimalistic setup. Like most of the things I own is in one of those, you know, pieces of furniture, aside from like jackets and like common household things. And like many of those are now empty. Like I have nothing to stuff it with.
Exactly. Yeah. This is also my idea here, that I have just too many empty places which like don't serve any purpose. And for example, they are right at my reach. So it doesn't make any sense, you know?
And it just tempts you to fill it with stuff you don't need.
Exactly. That's why I want to rethink it. I want to, I have bought three new structures, but they're small and I will try not to fill them up with too many things. And also, I'm going to reuse some of the IKEA stuff, but I actually bought the furniture. The structures that I bought are not from IKEA, are from like a local company because they are similar to the IKEA stuff. So they're compatible with IKEA. but they're made out of real wood, and not kinda wood paper thingy that IKEA does.
Mostly paper.
Mostly paper. Exactly. So this was another incentive to have really wooden furniture instead of paper furniture. And the paper furniture, again, it served the purpose. I mean, you know, these things here, they've, as you can see in the photos, like they've been here for many years. So they really served me well. So it's time to change them to something else.
So, okay. So let me get this straight. You're doing this, let's face it, mostly because you're procrastinating on real important stuff.
Exactly.
But mostly because you have old stuff and you don't need that much space, and so you want to reduce this stuff.
Exactly. I want to reduce, and I want to rethink what I really need and, you know, like how I want to work, you know? Mm-hmm. And I took, for example, this opportunity to buy a better document shredder, because the one that I have here is like, it only accepts like 5 sheets of paper, and now I bought
why do you need a better paper shredder?
Because I still receive lots of paper and I hate shredding, so I want to shred them, you know, as quickly as possible.
Why do you receive a lot of paper?
Because they keep sending me paper.
Who is they?
Yeah, lots of things, you know, because it's also private stuff, like, you know, I don't know, from local government, from whatever, like, I still receive lots of paper. There's still lots of paper to be had. And also, whenever Amazon ships things to me, my label is on the box, so I always take it down and put it through shredder. So I don't want my personal information, like address and stuff, to be available. So I don't shred that much, but I don't like shredding a lot. So I bought a shredder that is not very expensive, but is able to like eat 12 up to 12 pages at a time. So this one, just with one swoop, I can shred everything and I'm just done.
Yeah, you know, that's actually an interesting thing, because I'm almost completely got rid of paper in my life, and most of the pieces of paper I receive are like invoices from companies that send me a PDF anyway, and like sort of can't figure out that I don't really want a piece of paper, but it's just like mostly stuff that comes from packages and stuff I can just throw away.
Exactly.
Recycle. Like I very rarely, and it's like, it's very little paper. I receive very little paper, and very, very rarely it's something that actually has like any private information, like government stuff, like maybe like once a year. Like most of that stuff is electronic anyway. Like it's rare for me to receive paper with anything important. And this thing that when you get like a shipping label or something like that with your name and address, I used to do that, but then I realized like that actually seems so, not just so paranoid, but so sort of useless, because the only place where someone digging through your trash would see your name and, you know, your first and last name next to your address would be if they dig through trash next to where you live, so they would know that anyway. So, like, what's the point?
But this trash is being taken and it goes to a different place when it's with the other trash. And, you know, it's going to be somewhere there or somewhere else. I don't know. Maybe it's a little bit paranoid, but I don't want it. I don't want, you know, my name and address same place, in a different place than here. So, yeah, I prefer to shred it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I had a cheap and like really bad shredder, but I stopped using it because I realized that, you know, like twice a year that I actually get something more than like my name and address next to it, which, you know, if you're good at digging, you'll probably find on the internet anyway. It's like maybe twice a year, so I can like do it by hand, and it's less pain in the ass than actually using shredder for everything.
No, this is one of the reasons.
Unless I got a nice one, but then it's like, nah, do I really need that additional piece of equipment? Nah.
No, I prefer to shred things. The new shredder will come here, and the old shredder actually will go downstairs, because very often we would receive the labels and we would, you know, put it in my inbox to shred it in my home office, which is not really efficient. So this way we will just put the shredder in some place, you know, in this room that we have next to the kitchen. So this way we will be able to shred things right away.
Very inefficient. It takes 2 flights of stairs.
Exactly. We don't want that. So so yeah, the shredder was an improvement. And apart from that, really, yeah, it's always also, you know, the thing is that what I like about this procrastinating by renovating home office is really you have this option to take a look around, really. Mm-hmm. And I've already done the Marie Kondo here. It was my first step actually to do Marie Kondo here in my home office. So now, after more than a year, it would be good to do it again, but with a different set of furniture. So
you should do it before putting stuff into the furniture.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. This is the idea. I'm going to first remove all the stuff from the furniture, do the Marie Kondo thing, you know, joy, no joy. And we will link in the show notes. And then put the furniture and configure the furniture in a way that it makes sense for the stuff that I want to keep.
Right. So I have a, like, in terms of like small home office improvements, there's a couple of things I did recently. One of them was a couple of months ago, actually. I improved the cabling situation below this desk, mm-hmm. because there was a power strip that was just like lying there. Like the strip didn't have any attachments, and I like there was no place to put it. It just sat there, and that was like ugly. So I designed and 3D printed just a like very simple sort of bracket to hold it, and I attached it just using screws to the sort of the ceiling of the desk. So that now it's like completely invisible. And then I have a lot of empty space in the furniture behind me and in the big cupboard. That was actually like 2 years ago that I've hidden the printer inside, because I figured, okay, there's an empty big place inside. So instead of having, you know, the laser printer outside where it mostly gathers dust because I rarely use a printer, it would be inside where it would, you know, not gather dust and just not look ugly. Printers look ugly. And recently, and I had a lot of like modems and other like, you know, networking equipment and other stuff like that underneath it. Like there's a gap between the floor and the bottom of the cupboard. But the problem was that recently I switched to an ISP and they got me a modem, which is also a Wi-Fi router. I have a better Wi-Fi router, so I disabled it. But because it's optical link and not Ethernet, I still need to use their box just as a router. And it was shaped such that I couldn't hide it underneath. And the plug, you know, the power plug was such that I couldn't fit it inside the power strip also hiding underneath it. So I did a little reorganization. And now, like, all of that equipment is also tucked away inside one of those cupboard doors, and the only thing sticking out, just barely, if you pay attention, is the Wi-Fi router, because it fits underneath, and this way it just gets me the best possible reception, because the antennas are right next to the door, which is close to the center of the apartment. So this gives me the best Wi-Fi reception, and unless you're looking at your feet, like, you won't even notice it. And this way it doesn't, like, it's much cleaner while giving me best possible networking. And I don't use cabled networking anywhere in the house. So, you know, I want my 300 megabits fast.
So you have your Wi-Fi router, like, below the thing?
Yeah, so in the space between the floor and the bottom of the cupboard, this is... the router is flat with like three antennas sticking out, so mm-hmm. it can fit in that hole, and then the antennas are just like sticking out from the floor pretty much.
Ah, and it gives you good reception.
Yeah, exactly, because it's, you know, situated nicely without it being, you know, standing outside.
Okay.
Right. Because like you in the room next to your home office, you have a lot of like printers and other equipment, and it's all like sitting outside. And I wanted to avoid that. I wanted to like hide all of it as possible, you know, as much as possible.
Okay. You're giving me ideas. mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the cable management thing, as you will be able to see through the link to my home office renovations, has always been the main theme. I like cable management, and in a way, I enjoy setting it up because I enjoy the fact of having things around and having things accessible without seeing the cables. This is just this is like this geeky nerdy thing, you know, of really. So that's why I understand that you it was annoying for you to have this power strip lying on the floor with the cables just loosely attached, and it's completely different thing when you have it really nicely done. There are hardly any cables visible, but everything is accessible. It's like magic.
Yeah, it would be more magic if it was all. If the cables weren't necessary, but most of them either are necessary or like reducing and combining things together to get less cables would just be so impractical and expensive that it's just not worth it. You with some reorganization, you can have a good time procrastinating away from real work by using your skills and creativity for nicely laying out cables and hiding them creatively. While achieving better aesthetics. It's nice. You're right.
Yes, exactly. So that's why I'm always looking forward to renovating my home office. And this is another project that I'm trying to do. My wife is trying to convince me to also put a different floor in my home office because, as you know, I have just this small piece of wooden floor in the middle of it, which looks ridiculous.
Yes.
Because I just prefer wooden floor because it's nicer, it's cozier, it's warmer, and I'm thinking about it. I mean, maybe I'll just go all in and really also do the flooring here. I mean, you know, order somebody to do the flooring here because I won't be doing the flooring because I'm not really good at this. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's not that difficult.
Yeah, I know, but it's gonna be, you know, I don't know. It's lots of work.
I really like doing renovations. You're right. It's a lot of work, and you have to find the right time to do it. But you know, normally we mostly work with our minds, not with like physically. So every 2 or 3 years, when you need to like move stuff around, destroy all of the wallpapers, repaint everything, and you know, attach stuff, like it's a lot of fun. I like that.
Yeah, this is a very valid point because normally what we do is virtual. Like the outcome of our work is on the screen. It's and this is like this, you know, this I don't know, this this primal thing of a guy, you know, using a hammer to build something, right? You know, like you're
I don't think that that's how hammers work, but okay.
Whatever. But it's like, you know, you're building something that's for real. That's, you know, that you can touch. That is here. You know, it's like it gives me the satisfaction of doing that. And sometimes when I build furniture, I try to get my daughters involved so that they can they are my helpers. And this way we have so much fun.
Yeah, if possible, like you always avoid hiring people to help out with renovations, not just. To save money, but it's just like it's so much more fun to like, you know, get around like, you know, dad and my brother and mm-hmm. some friends to do some work. Yeah. All right. Unless you have more to say about your little renovation, I wanted to give you an update about my Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, tell me.
Okay, so after the last episode when you gave me the ideas, I immediately, after recording, ordered a Raspberry Pi. I got the best one, which is like $35, and it has like a quad-core CPU, 1 gig of RAM. It's pretty fast for something that costs $35. And I've been playing around with it. This is early days, but there's a couple of things I've already played with and figured out. So I set up Octoprint, link in the show notes, which is this server for controlling 3D printers. So I think I explained this in one of the previous episodes, but briefly, the 3D printer is really dumb. Like, it's a very simple machine, and the processor controlling it is extremely, extremely small and incapable. It's like, I don't know, like 20 megahertz and like, you know, maybe 20 or 50 something kilobytes of memory. Like it's really tiny and useless. It's really a marvel that it can do what it can do. And so to get something to print, I have to detach the SD card, put it in this SD card reader inside the USB to USB-C adapter, put it in my Mac, usually try again because it's sometimes weird, copy over the file for the print job, detach, attach the SD card, restart the printer because it doesn't see the SD card for some reason, and start the print, right? And so with Octoprint, but the 3D printer can be controlled not just from the SD card, but also over USB. But yeah. You don't really want to control it from your computer because if it goes to sleep or you just want to take it with you, the print dies, right? Okay. But if you have a Raspberry Pi, then that can be the controlling computer for the printer. Uh-huh. And then Octoprint both controls the printer and puts up a web server that you can access on your local network. So mm-hmm. on my Mac or my iPhone or whatever, I can type, you know, Raspberry Pi.local and it will show me the Octoprint interface. And I can upload files to the printer and start the print job. And I can see and control all of the values, like how it's progressing with the printing, are the temperatures stable and whatever. Now, of course, I the printer is right next to me, so it doesn't give me that much benefit, but it's a little bit simpler. But then the cool thing about it is you can attach some extra options to it and make it available via the internet. So the simplest way of allowing Octoprint to be accessed from the internet is stupid because like you don't want to just forward the port and make something that could potentially burn down your house available on the internet, but there are safe ways to do it. And then you can attach a webcam. I managed to configure this driver that can this Linux driver that can see video from a webcam. I just got some webcam from a friend that some really old like piece of crap that he wanted to throw away, and I just needed that, and I can attach it to the 3D printer so that it looks at the print bed, right? And then from the Octoprint web interface, you can see the print, right? So you could also attach to it a push notification sender so that when the print job is complete, it sends you a push notification to your phone.
Wow.
That will be easy to do. There's this thing called, I think, Push Bullet or something like that. And then another thing that it's just an app where you can like push through a simple API push notification. So you can easily attach it to, you just download an app on your phone and then you can easily attach API calls to it, right? So you can easily make Octoprint just send a notification when the print is done. And then it would also not be very difficult to connect a relay to the power supply of the 3D printer so that you could control the relay from the Raspberry Pi. And now you could start the print and leave the house. When the print is done, you'd get a push notification. You open the Octoprint website. You see that the print is complete. You see the webcam view and you see that it's actually done and your house didn't burn down. And then you can send a power down command that will like cut off the power to the 3D printer. So not just like stop controlling the printer, but actually shut it off. Mm-hmm. And that would be pretty cool. So I got most of the way there. I haven't configured the last few parts, but the Octoprint works and the webcam works. I also played with this other thing that I've played with in the past, but I never finished the project. So I may have mentioned it on the show, but there's this this little device, this USB device called RTL SDR, and that's a software-defined radio. So it's essentially a tiny radio frequency tuner. Mm-hmm. That you can tune to any frequency within like some range, and it costs like $10 or less than that even. I think I bought it for like $10 or $15. You connect it to the USB, And because most of the processing is done on the CPU and not using traditional analog methods, you can tune it to any frequency. And you can build really cool projects with it. So the really cool one is you can fetch pictures of the Earth from weather observation satellites. But you need a bigger antenna for that and the right type of antenna. So I haven't built that yet, but I want to. But a thing you can do very easily is just connect the dinky antenna that comes with the SDR and track airplanes on the sky. Which is useless because you can just go to FlightAware or one of the other. Yeah, mm-hmm. but it's kind of fun when you like put out the antenna, just open this program on your computer on the Raspberry Pi, as I did, and you just see like all of the airplanes that it can see. And there's this like web server that you can also put up so that you can view it on your Mac and see it on the, you know, overlaid on Google Maps and click on the plane and see the details, you know, fetched from the internet about this plane. It's such a cool thing, though kind of useless.
yeah.
And then the most interesting thing, which I'm only getting started with, but I set up the Homebridge server. So we mentioned this last week. Homebridge is this this server that pretends to be a HomeKit accessory, and it has like literally hundreds of plugins to existing non-HomeKit compliant accessories. So you can hook up like a ton of different stuff so that it works with HomeKit by putting up this Homebridge server. And I use this, but you can also like plug in like literally something physically, electronically to the Raspberry Pi, which is what I did. So I use this little module called Homebridge GPIO or something like that. There's also like dozens of those that allow you to control the general purpose input output, like electrical pins on the Raspberry Pi. So for now, all I did is just connected an LED to it. Mm-hmm. And I can say, hey, Siri, turn on or turn off the light, and it will turn on or turn off the LED, which is totally useless, but it actually works. I managed to set it up and it works. And I got myself set up on some AliExpress. So like I think I mentioned last week, I wanted to try to control the two lights that I have in this room, the big light and this lamp desk, which mostly functions as this like evening bias light. And so I put a couple of modules from AliExpress. I bought a bistable relay. So a bistable relay is an electrical component that essentially works like a switch and allows you know, alternate current through or not. But unlike a normal relay you connect a little bit of direct current and it energizes a coil, and it brings together two contacts so that the current flows through. But first of all, it continuously needs energy, like you're wasting power on this coil thing. If you lose power, then it forgets its state, like it just disconnects and you have to like connect it again. Mm-hmm. And because it's electromechanical, because it's a coil, it might have just this tiny coil whine that you may or may not be able to hear. But the bistable relay, there are either those that you have two pins and mm-hmm. you put current for a split second on one pin, and it will just switch the state to on, or the other pin switch the state to off, but it stays mm-hmm. this way. So even if you lose, like it doesn't use any energy, only when switching, it doesn't have any buzz. And when you lose power, it will remember that it's either on or off. So it really works like a physical switch, but only changed electronically, right? And you can get that for $1.50. And I got this 430 megahertz transmitter. So there's this thing that most of those little dinky remote controls for like shades and cars and stuff like that use, well, the older cars, which is like primitive, like sending a short burst of bits, just a code over and over until the receiver picks it up and react to it. And you can get a transmitter that you can connect to Raspberry Pi for, actually you can get a transmitter and receiver pair for, I think, 80 cents. But mm-hmm. the problem with that is that the transmitter you'd connect to Raspberry Pi to send commands, but the receiver, you'd also need some sort of microcontroller to interpret the signals and figure out if this is the code you want or not. But thankfully, for 80 cents, you can buy a learning receiver, which you blast with the signal once while holding just a tiny button, and then the LED will blink twice to say, yep, I got it, it's good, and that will just react to this command. And it actually can have has four channels, so you can teach it extremely simply on four different codes, and then hook four different wires to different things. So this way, for $3, you can have a module controllable through HomeKit, just a receiver, and you hook it up to the bistable relay, and that's it. Like, there's literally nothing else to do. Like, it's just it's that. You don't need anything more. You don't need any custom electronics, no, just solder or hook up two wires together. And that's the plan. But I have to wait a couple of weeks until I receive the shipment.
So this way you'll turn into a HomeKit device manufacturer without actually complying with HomeKit.
Yeah. There's a couple of problems with this that I haven't yet figured out how to solve. The problem is it's one-way communication. So in general, for light switches, HomeKit assumes that you can tell whether it's currently turned off or yes. turned on. And I can easily make it flip the state, but I can't on the Raspberry Pi read the state yeah. of the relay. So yeah. I don't know how to fix that, but I'll probably make it pretend that it's not a light, but some other thing that, I don't know, I'll play with it.
And...
But either way, it won't set me back more than some $3. I'll put all the links in the show notes.
So in my case, I'm still happy with my setup, but some of the switches that I bought, the HomeKit switches, are a little bit flaky. And they lose connection sometimes, or when my router just freaks out, then they freak out too. So what I realized is that I have to do something about it. And my friend, who has many HomeKit devices, he told me, so Norbert from my magazine, he told me that I should set up static IP addresses for them. Because then, then they don't have to search for a dynamic address. And apparently with dynamic address, they just freak out. And they sometimes they just don't get a good MAC address. IP address. So this I have to do, I have to set it up on the router to just reserve an IP address for a specific device. And this way, all these devices will have their own IP addresses. And even if my power goes down, the router goes down, they will connect immediately because, the router will not have to deliver them new addresses.
Right. How many devices do you have plugged into your router? Like how many MAC addresses does it have to service?
For now, I just checked in my Eero setup. It's more than 40 something.
Man, that's a lot. I think that's part of the problem. Like, before those Internet of Things BS things, you never had more than maybe five devices connected to the home local network. So I don't think those routers are really designed to handle that many.
Yeah, I have Eero as my router, and Eero is a very nice mesh setup with three routers creating one mesh network. And I trust it will hold it. But that's why, for example, you must not use the ISP given router as your main router, because then it's a recipe for failure, because these are really bad. So that's why I will report back, how this went and if the connection got really stable. But yeah, you're right. Normally, a few computers, few mobile phones, and that's it. So you would have just below 10 devices on your network. And now with all these light switches and relays and all these things connected to the router, I have more than 40. So it's quite a lot.
Yeah. At my favorite cafe in Toruń, they have this this router that they were given by their ISP, which was designed to be used at home. It's one of the most popular ISPs in Poland, and it's mm-hmm. crap, obviously. And like when I was first there a couple of times, the internet worked, but only on Facebook.com and a couple of other domains, and other stuff didn't work. And I asked them why, and they didn't know. It worked on some of their devices. We couldn't really figure it out. Me and my friend offered help. We dug through the configuration, and we couldn't find anything. There was no restrictions, no DNS problems. Like, we tried a couple of things. Ultimately, we reset the settings to factory settings, and it worked. And apparently those have this built-in mode that give away a secondary Wi-Fi network, this free network that anyone can plug into, but it only works for social media, and apparently for some reason maybe it overflowed somehow and connected us to the wrong network, even though everything looked fine. But the funny thing is, it took maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and the problem is back. Now, the funny thing about that funny thing is that for me and my friend, who are one of the first devices that connected to this network that was set up again, it works perfectly. Connects instantly, everything works. Another friend comes over, always has to set up his own hotspot. He was outside of this blessed list of the first connected device, and it doesn't work. So yeah, never use your ISP router, that piece of crap.
Yes. They are flaky, and you just... Yeah, no, you spend just too much time figuring out what is wrong. As you said, all the settings look legit. Everything looks well set up, and it's not. Okay, so to wrap it up, I have a book recommendation, which is really cool. One of these, for me, life-changing books. The E-Myth Revisited. It's a book about running a small business. I was recommended this book several times by a few people, and always thought, E-Myth, I thought it's going to be about e-commerce and things, and I was like, yeah, whatever, I know all about that.
Yeah, the name of the book sounds terrible.
Exactly.
I would never read it if not recommended by someone I trust.
Exactly. So that's why I never took it, that's why I never read it. But it's all, the E stands for entrepreneurship. So the entrepreneurship myth, and the book is about this fact, is about this notion that that people who don't like their jobs set up their own companies and then they fail, and why they fail, and what's wrong with their attitude, with their way of setting up their company. So basically, it's like a productivity book, but for entrepreneurs. It's fantastic. It really made me look at things differently of how we work and how we do things in our company, and just help me rethink things. And so that's why, for example, my last quarterly offsite and my last weekly review were really good, because I was already thinking how to do things differently in the company. So highly recommend it. Very cool book. That's it.
All right. I wasn't going to do that, but since you mentioned this, I'm also going to recommend a book that I've read, which is called Bad Blood, Secrets and Lies in a Silicon Valley Startup. It's about Theranos, did you read it?
No, I didn't read it. I know the story of Theranos and the bullshit CEO.
Yeah, this name, it was in my sphere of consciousness twice. Once somewhere long time ago, I just barely saw the promise of the startup that's working on something revolutionary, sounded really good. And the second thing I saw, but also didn't pay too much attention to it, was a post by Jean-Louis Gasset about Theranos being bullshit.
Yeah.
But also didn't read too much into it. I didn't know the whole story, the whole context. I didn't know it's that interesting, and this book is quite interesting. Like, yeah, you remember you recommended to me, I think this is the way it went, this another book with bullshit Silicon Valley startups.
Yeah, exactly. Disrupted.
Disrupted. It was also really good, but like in a very different way, just ridiculous and funny. And this is just like man, that's terrible. That's just fraud. that somehow no one figured out for many, many years that it's just a total fraud. Really interesting. Yeah, would recommend giving it a read if you like reading stories like this.
Yeah, just to tell you that I'm finally watching Silicon Valley. I wasn't watching this show, so I'm catching up. I'm in at the end of the season 2 right now, so it's hilarious. And many things are so close to real. It's fantastic. I really enjoyed.
Yeah, it's a little divisive. Some people just don't find it funny. I do. I also like spoke with people who actually live in or work or worked in Silicon Valley. And some of them are not amused by it. Perhaps they find it too serious. And some of them do not find it funny because they're just depressed about how close to reality this is, even though it's supposed to be just a funny comedy.
Completely.